We've been talking this week just a little bit about, now for some expert commentary, the story that I'm reading from the Chicago Sun-Times, Payback Time. Family sues University of Chicago to recoup nearly $23 million they've given the school, claiming it mismanaged the Pearson Institute. Pearsons are evidently some very successful and very generous people. I'm sure they're swell folks. And they said, let's give $100 million to the University of Chicago to create, with their name on it, a study and resolution organization for global conflicts. That's a good idea. And look, if the Gates can wipe out disease in third world countries, you know, maybe somebody could be just as ambitious and make the world a safer or better place. I presume that's the idea. I've said earlier, and I'll just state it again for the record, that I would prefer them to spend the money more locally and more specifically, more, you know, like on teachers or on art supplies or on school lunches or on, I don't know, something that gets in the hands of somebody and makes an actual factual difference.
You want to see the instant impact.
I kind of do, and I get your criticism of that, that's a Band-Aid approach. But I don't think that hiring art and music teachers for schools for 10 years is a Band-Aid. You know, kids will go through schools having better lives and come out richer as a result, just as a for instance.
But the world will not be better for them.
I don't think the world's going to be better for this institute either. That's my problem. Okay, so here's Stacey Palmer. Stacey is the editor of the Chronicle of Philanthropy, and she joins us on WGN Radio. Hi, Stacey. You're on WGN. How are you?
Great to join you.
So jump into this conversation. What do you think of what we've said so far?
You know, this is the big debate in philanthropy, is what money can do the most good, and how do we figure that out, and how do you channel all these different passions that people who are very rich and people who are just middle class and people who are poor, how do we all decide how much of our giving is going to good causes, what mm-hmm. causes, how much? And it's a tricky, tricky question, but one of the things we certainly have seen is that colleges have been extraordinarily successful in raising these very big gifts from a lot of wealthy people. So I think we're going to keep seeing that trend happening. So that means there could also be more of these disputes over how should the money be used and it really being used as the donors wanted.
I hate that I sound, you know, who am I to judge somebody else's philanthropy? You know, I ain't giving anybody $100 million. But if they ask for my advice, I would just tell them, no, we're not going to make, you're not going to, the University of Chicago isn't going to come up with the key for world peace, but we could sure make specific lives better. I mean, is there a certain logic to what I'm saying? And I wonder what the philanthropic community thinks about that.
Yeah, I think people don't see it as an either or, that wealthy people often give a significant sum to causes like you're talking about. They just don't necessarily get as much publicity for giving to the food bank or, you know, doing some of those kinds of local giving. So, you know, but the other problem is we don't really have an easy way to say, here's what $50 million to good cause X would do. If you gave $50 million to your really small local charity, it probably doesn't have the way to dispose that. So colleges have ways of thinking about that. And what some people in philanthropy are trying to do is figure out, how do we package these ideas for social change in a better way so that they can attract $100 million, $200 million? So you see some of that in efforts to improve the schools, for example. There are lots of donors who are giving really big gifts to help improve local schools. In Los Angeles, there's a tremendous effort that has really helped improve the schools, and it's a couple that's just invested in making sure that their money is going to what works and what makes a difference. So, you know, as we see more of those role models, perhaps more wealthy people will follow that.
Yeah. I can imagine that's daunting, too. You know, I know this sounds ridiculous, but my idea is you just get a wheelbarrow of money and you just start knocking on the doors of schools and ask the principal, what do you need? And then you just give them the money and then they go buy it. Hopefully they don't steal it. Hopefully they spend it wisely. I'm imagining now all the complications with my idea. But, you know, Chance the Rapper here in Chicago has been chastising the city fathers for not spending enough money or spending it wisely. And he's putting some of his own money where his mouth is, giving it directly to the schools, you know?
Yeah, and that's why there's a terrific charity called Donors Choose that you may know about that allows people to give money directly to school teachers who say, you know, my classroom doesn't have any crayons, and you can give them crayons, you can give them all kinds of things, no matter what your means are. And it has raised $1 billion for schools.
Really?
Lots of people contributing. So that's a terrific way to get people to sort of, and Stephen Colbert is one of their big supporters, and he's helped both give a lot of money and raise. So there are big dollars, but there are all small kinds of contributions that all of us can make. And you can follow the progress of what the students are doing with whatever gift you
give.
So it's a pretty terrific charity. So
Teachers
there
choose.
Are efforts.
Yeah.
Donors choose. There are donors choose. And I think your listeners who hear about those kinds of efforts and go check out that website will probably really want to help people. And you know, you get to get involved and choose whatever part of the country you want to be involved in. It could be local, or you could say, hey, I want to help somebody across the country.
Do you have any advice or wisdom on I could buy a cow or a sheep or a goat for a village or a family in some far-flung part of the world where that would actually improve the quality of their life? Do they really get the animal, and does it really make a difference? Do you think that's a good use of my, you know, $25 a month or whatever it is?
Yeah, there have been studies that look at things like that to see, you know, when you're buying the livestock or doing those kinds of things and giving them to families, that's what helps allow them to have a livelihood. And so it's really not about just giving them the animal. It's really about saying, how do they build a business that they, in their economy, that they can use to grow. And the studies have shown that it works, but there's a new thought in philanthropy about helping people in very poor parts of the world to say, really, the smartest thing to do is just give them cash. So there are these efforts that are just give people cash directly, none of the intervention of a charity, not saying, you know, we're going to go send community aid workers in to help you. We're just going to give you cash and see what you do with it. And the results have been phenomenal. It's a lot more efficient way to do it. And, you know, they're doing these studies that are proving it's working. And now there's an experiment in one of the Houston suburbs after the flooding. Most of this work has been done in Africa, but now they're trying it to see how it works in the United States. So that could really revolutionize how giving works.
Is that microloans or is it outright cash grants?
It's outright cash. It says, you know, here's $1,000. Do with it what you will.
Wow.
And, you know, there was the fear that people might not use it to advance. You know, what would they use it for? And it turns out that people use it for all kinds of smart things, either to make their house more secure or to feed their family in various ways, but mostly to build small businesses. And that's what helps them get a sustainable lifestyle. But, you know, I think we forget what are some of the obstacles to people doing well in society.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, see, and that goes back.
A little cash makes a difference.
That goes back to my thought about the $100 million going to the University of Chicago, which, by the way, also already has $100 million. And the University of Illinois does, and Stanford does, and Harvard does, and a lot of them do. And so you think, gosh, but for some people, it's like the president said, you know, you give folks $1,000, it'll change their life. I don't want to get into that conversation, but I mean, a small amount of money can mean a lot to a lot of people. And if you have that much money, it just seems to me you could be so impactful to so many people. You said to me on and off the air, I guess now, right, Stacey, that it's not a zero-sum game. That
exactly.
Just because you take it, all right, so then don't fund a global institute at the University of Chicago. It doesn't mean that the money's going to fall into the hands of all of these people. So I hear you on that. Has your magazine or the philanthropic community generally been following this University of Chicago story?
Yes, everybody's watching it. Lawsuits involving donors are very, very rare. Colleges don't want to get into tangles, at least publicly or in court, with the people who support them, because obviously that's going to cause other donors to raise questions and say, should I give to this institution? So clearly something went very wrong. It's hard to tell which side, you know, where the problem is or whether it's really on the part of both of them. But clearly, you know, the university felt that it had to get to this point where it had to say, you know, these are the things that we think are really important for to preserve our academic independence, and donors, you don't get to have control over the money that you have handed over, and you got a tax deduction.
Yeah, so that's interesting.
So once you make a charitable gift, you need to trust the institution to do the right thing, but clearly the donors didn't feel that way, and there was some kind of a gift contract that they wrote up, and they feel like the terms of that were violated. So it's a pretty sticky situation.
I guess so. Well, an attorney was on this radio station this week, and she said, Karen Conti said, if I recall correctly, if I give you a watch as a gift, that's your watch, and I may change my mind about that gift later, but it doesn't mean I get to get it back. Maybe the contract language in this case, you know, allows them to do so, but is it generally understood in the philanthropic community that once you give the gift, even if the university isn't spending the money the way you wish they would, you don't really get to or should not recall that gift, right?
Right. And, you know, there are legal questions involved here. It's not even just sort of an ethical you should or you shouldn't, but what does the law say about what you're able to do? And part of that key part is that the donors would have given the money over and gotten a tax deduction. So, you know, that means that you and I help subsidize that gift in a way. And so that's why it's in the charity's hands, not in the donor's hands. So that's what makes it even trickier.
Hey, does the new tax code change how people are giving these days?
We expect that it will. Charities are very nervous that giving is going to decrease. And where it's expected to hit the hardest is probably among middle-class donors who aren't really going to get the tax breaks that they used to get. And so that means middle-class donors tend to give the most to local charities. So colleges like the University of Chicago are still going to do really well, but local charities are very nervous that they may not be able to get the gifts that they once got. So they're trying to make sure donors remember that it's not just about the tax break, but about the good that you can do with those dollars.
Yeah. I suppose they knew that when they wrote the tax bill, that if, what did we do? We doubled the exemption, so fewer people are going to itemize, and therefore the middle-class Americans, somebody making $100,000 a year, they might not itemize, and therefore they're not going to save those receipts, and they're not going to be so willing to give, right?
Right. I mean, just 5% of Americans are expected to itemize under the new tax code. So that means that those are the only people who have access to the charitable deduction. Now, some people might just choose to give less, but some people could choose not to give at all because they were giving for tax reasons. But certainly, it's more expensive to give if you don't get a tax deduction.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of subsidizing things, but you're right, John. People give maybe because they're charitable. That's the idea, not because it's a write-off. But it does grease the skids a little bit, doesn't it? It makes it easier to, if 30% of what you give, you get to write off your taxes, right?
And that might mean you give more. So, you know, if it only costs you 70 cents on a dollar to give, you probably stretched a little bit more. So I don't think people will stop giving, but they may look at their budgets a little differently.
I got a couple calls and questions from listeners. Do you have just one more minute for us?
Absolutely.
Okay. Stacey Palmer is on a phone line. She's the editor of the Chronicle of Philanthropy. So our listener was just wondering, she said, what about the billionaires in this country? Specifically, she was wondering about Donald Trump's philanthropy. But just talk about the billionaires. Are they a generous lot in this country?
One of the things that we look at every year is the people who give the most. And so we rank the 50 donors who have given the most. And many of them are not even rich enough to be on the Forbes 400 list. So it tells you something that at least 150 of the people who are on that list every year, we're just not seeing very much giving by them. Now, they may be giving quietly, and nobody's required to publicize this, but it's always been striking to us that the vast majority of America's wealthiest really don't show up in any public displays of giving, and they haven't signed the giving pledge, which says I'm going to commit at least half of my wealth. So we're not seeing a lot of generosity publicly among those people. So there are real questions. It's certainly people who are less affluent than that who are very generous, and many of them give multiple times.
Well, who are the stars? Is it Ted Turner? Is it Bill Gates? Is it, who are the celebrated great givers in this country?
Bill Gates and Melinda are usually at the top, and they've been very generous. So have Warren Buffett, because he committed a good chunk of his fortune to their foundation and to his kids' foundations. Michael Bloomberg is usually on the list every year very generously. And then we're seeing a lot of the young technology wealth giving. So Mark Zuckerberg and Priscilla Chan, Sheryl Sandberg, those kinds of folks are appearing very regularly and giving a lot of money every single year.
We are out of time. Your website's very interesting. I don't know that I'm going to subscribe to the magazine. Maybe folks I know obviously do and will, but I would suggest that you at least click through philanthropy.com. The Chronicle of Philanthropy is edited by Stacy Palmer. Stacy, we'll visit again. I appreciate your time today.
Perfect. It was a pleasure.